We made this. Welcome to the X-Cast, The Truth Is In Here. This is our special Fight the Future Minute podcast. I am your host, Marlene Stemme. You're listening to our coverage of Minute 98 of the X-Files Fight the Future. This minute begins at 97 minutes with Mulder filling the syringe with vaccine and ends at 97 minutes and 59 seconds with Mulder pulling the feeding tube out of Scully's throat. To discuss this minute, I'm joined by X-Cast patron Cortland Waters Bartley. Welcome back to Fight the Future Minute, Cortland.
Thanks, Marlene. Good to be here.
Yes, it's good to continue the discussion. So when last we saw them, Mulder was preparing to fill the syringe with vaccine for Scully, and he had the cap of the syringe in his mouth as he was doing so.
Always.
So, yes.
Always putting the things in his mouth.
Right. So with that, Mulder manages to fill the syringe with vaccine, which I would not think would be such an easy task in an unstable environment to stick the needle in the vial. It's hard to see if the liquid's going in there. Sometimes it's a really thin, you know, needle. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking about that when I was scrutinizing it, that he's having to really focus on doing that in the midst of this, like, this crazy situation.
Yeah. I mean, it's not an easy task, and he is pretty laser focused on that particular task at this time. So maybe he just got really lucky. That seems likely in Mulder's case. but, you know, or maybe he has a lot of practice filling syringes, honestly. It seems like they could be needing injections pretty frequently.
That's true.
At some points in their lifetimes. So.
Yeah. Right. We've only had a glimpse of the history of health crises, so it's possible that this has happened. Something not on this magnitude, but something has happened before.
Right, sure.
And he just has to make the best of it, which Mulder can usually do. So he gets the vaccine and he injects it into her left shoulder. And at that point, Scully jolts and Mulder asks Scully, which is their first dialogue together in this segment. And then the tube that's down Scully's throat starts to wither and shrivel. And it was green before. It's just this kind of green, eerie, shriveling color, which I think looks really effective in the lighting that they used.
Yeah, I actually think it is. So I know we talked about this in our previous minute, how she's so like unnaturally still when he breaks that glass. And I think it's like the second that he sticks that needle in and he kind of starts injecting, she does that blink and that little like jerk. It's so perfectly timed. I mean, obviously, you know, movie magic, but I think that it works so well to show how immediate the effect of that injection is. And then to progress through the like withering tube, that whole sequence is effective and gross in a good way, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. I wonder if I had to really analyze it, like would a vaccine work that quickly? But clearly it does. And then you don't think so?
Well, here's the thing. this is just kind of, I guess, the way my brain works. I a little bit take issue with calling it a vaccine in the first place, because Scully is already infected. So I feel like it's maybe just medicine at this point, or like, you know, because I've always assumed a vaccine is a thing you have to take preventatively. And it's too late. She's already got the virus. So, but even, I mean, I don't know any medicine that works that fast either though. So, but this is a syndicate and I don't think we're supposed to understand.
I agree. I guess it's like an antidote.
Yeah. Like an antidote, like an antivenom. Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. That's good. Yes. So if you think of it like that, then, and it could be reversing the effects pretty quickly in that case.
Well, you never know how these things work. It sure does in this particular minute.
Yeah. And it's dramatically really effective, as you said, because she's like blinks and kind of comes aware. And then she's aware as that tube is shriveling up. Ugh. It's not like it shrivels up and she's, you know, everything is taken care of. And then she's like, oh, goodness, what happened? Like she's there and present for all of the gross details, everything that's happening to her. So this is going on, and then suddenly the base station that they're in quakes, and Mulder falls down. I'm going to say, of course, Mulder falls down, because I feel like in the scene, it's sort of like an, oh, of course, this is what happens in the movies. But it's the whole thing is shaking and quaking. And so he falls down in the midst of this rescue attempt. So there's trouble. And then alarms are sounding. And then we go to another control room, a man that's watching a monitor that shows a liquid chromatograph with liquid purity profile, which I thought was an interesting and appropriate title. It's the title of the chart. And he's alarmed when the screen shows a contaminant alert. And so then on the monitor, there's a little visual of all of the cryopods. And they're all blue except for one, which is green. And that one is Scully's. And then you see as the adjacent containers start to turn green as the vaccine spreads. And I thought that was kind of a cool little detail that they put in there.
I think it's at this point, right, where the cigarette smoking man says something to the effect of like, Mulder has the vaccine. Like, mm-hmm. we know that already, man. But anyway, yeah. He knows immediately what has happened. You know, there are like alarm bells and like the ship is like shaking and he knows. He's like, oh no, this is a big problem. This is it.
That's the only explanation.
Yes. He Boom. Knows. Yeah. Vaccine. It's here.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. What does he say? There's a contaminant in the system. And then it's almost with a sense of wonderment. He's like, Mulder has the vaccine. You know?
Yeah. Where did he get that? Right. Who gave that to him?
And I think it's interesting that the contaminated containers on the little graph turn green. I just think the use of color is really cool in this too, and significant as well. So then the Arctic base station kind of reacts like a living organism. It's not just like a building that's, you know, we saw the building blow up way earlier in the movie in previous minutes. So we've seen destruction of structures, but this is almost like a living being that's being attacked. I thought that that was kind of interesting the way that they did that and made that effect. And then I believe in the commentary, Rob Bowman mentions that the vaccine is infecting the entire ship. So there is something that's sort of alive about it, even, you know, beyond its systems, it seems like.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that the way they sort of show that, where they show what happens to Scully, the sort of immediate, here's what this injection has done for Scully. And then that effect, you know, ripples outward, I think, from the chart that you're talking about. And then as we can kind of see like bigger and bigger ramifications happening in the setting. And you're right in the commentary, because I remember hearing that and thinking that that was just not ever how I thought about it as a viewer. Like, I always thought that the aliens can sense that this has happened, that their system is contaminated, and they're mad. Mm-hmm. Like, in my brain, they're just really furious about it. Like, and they're like waking up and, you know, coming after this thing that's harming them. But he specifically mentions that they're breaking out of their pods to try to escape being or avoid being infected by this vaccine or medicine or whatever. Yeah. And I have just never thought about it that way, like that difference at all. So I was really interested to hear him talk about it that way. Like, it's not that they're just waking up really furious at Mulder. They're actually, they're trying to escape like a harmful thing.
Yeah. And so at this point, Mulder looks around. He's fallen, you know, when he falls, he's kind of getting a sense of his surroundings even more. And so he's looking around. Scully is struggling in the background. So he reorients himself to Scully, which is a good thing. She's having real trouble breathing. She's kind of gasping and choking against the tube in her throat. And then her eyes are huge. So Mulder pulls off the mouth seal and pulls the tube out of her throat. And it just keeps pulling and pulling and pulling. And so the minute that we're talking about pretty much ends with the tube finally out of, like, popping out of her mouth.
I feel like as viewers, we're supposed to believe that that breathing feeding tube, like, went, like, all the way down into her, like, stomach or whatever. And it is disturbing to think about and gross.
I think we are supposed to think that. And I think just the way that she's, I mean, just the,
yeah,
her reactions, like physically and internally to that being pulled out, suggest that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And it is very effective in grossing me out.
Yes, it is. It
works so well. Yeah. And I mean, good for that. I think that that's really good work, like, on their part. Like, she clearly had all of that, you know, in her mouth.
Right.
Good for them for pulling that off so convincingly.
I know. Well, in the book they did, The Making of the X-Files Fight the Future, Gillian Anderson talks about filming that scene, and she said that it was supposed to look like the tube was down to Scully's stomach. And so she said that she took a string and wrapped it around her tongue, basically, And as David Duchovny would like pull it out of her mouth, she just kind of unspooled it to his pulling. And then special effects created the CGI effect of Mulder pulling this alien tube. So, you know, it's good that she didn't have to do like all that gagging for real, but it's right. still, I mean, it's very compelling.
Very convincing. So,
yeah. Do you have anything else on that one?
I think we're good. Yeah.
Okay. That's all for this Fight the Future Minute. We'll be back next time for Minute 99, for which I will once again be joined by Cortland. And in the meantime, where can our listeners find you on social media?
I am on Twitter and Instagram. You can find me by searching for my name, Cortlan.
Okay. And I'm on Twitter at Marlene, MHS, and on Facebook in the XCast Basement group. Thank you all for listening. And until next time, trust no one.
Elsewhere, on We Made This. The giddy carousel of pop.
So there's just one thing we need to know. Where were you on the 13th of July, 1985?
I definitely watched the whole of Live Aid, sat 2 inches away from the telly. My mum and my stepdad and my stepsister coming in and out and trying to prise me away from the telly and not really managing.
I was in Wembley. I took a day off work. They didn't believe I was going. I had to show them the ticket.
Went to a dog show at Malvern.
Oh!
And saw Auntie Sandra and Uncle Jeff.
I was there. Me and a school friend went. My mum and dad drove us down. They had a day in London. We went to the concert.
The Movie Palace.
So, Carl, what is White Heat about for you?
For me, it's about where the gangster genre is at this point in time. And I think one of the interesting things to look at with gangster films is always like, how do they take the temperature of the time that they're made? So I suppose it comes at a very interesting time in terms of like globally, doesn't it? You know, you had the proclamation of the People's Republic of China, you had the Soviet Union testing the atomic bomb, stuff like that, you know. So there's something interesting about this film, which ends with this big explosion at the chemical factory, which comes along at this time of like nuclear tension.
Between the notes.
I think it's important to remember throughout the 1990s into the early 2000s, there were loads and loads of chill out albums that were released, like repeatedly. They were all over the place. My dad always used to collect those, he used to buy them. And Morricone was always on those, which is another sign of how remarkable he was. He could cross over into the mainstream populist sphere. And the score for The Mission was always on those albums, particularly Gabriel's oboe, which is an interesting story. I'll look this up. So Jeremy Irons plays the character of Gabriel in the movie, and he performs the oboe. Well, he mimes playing the oboe in the film, and then that's obviously overdubbed with the music.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.